Maestro Shippers, I'll ask soon about events at the Metropolitan and the Spoleto Festival, but first of all, let's begin at home. This year, the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra is celebrating its 80th anniversary, and you're bringing audiences an exciting season. Will you speak about this season?
Well, I feel like a child confronted with an anniversary of such magnitude, and I feel like a father. I don't know why, and I don't give myself the credit for it. I think it was just a kind of happy marriage when I came to Cincinnati. The orchestra is now as good as any orchestra can be. I really feel when I conduct the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra, first of all, I am happiest on the podium when I'm with that orchestra, not because it's my orchestra, because it's not my orchestra. It's its own orchestra. They've gotten to a level of performance that is, to me, almost scary, but at the same time, very touching. It's a great orchestra.
And the works that you'll be performing this season include a wide variety, but it seems to me with an emphasis perhaps on Russian literature.
Only by accident. I think almost any big symphonic organization tends today to have a lot of Russian music because the Russians seem to have had a healthier bridge from the beginning of the century to the late 40s, and even now. I mean, Shostakovich, remember, is still alive. And it was the Russians who held on to the big forms. It was the Americans who, not unhealthily, denied the big forms. By big forms, I mean the big symphonies. And no matter how unique programming is, people like to pat me on the back for my programming, still, any good dinner, it doesn't matter how fancy or how different the programming is, you want to be able to sit down with one work that lasts longer than 12 minutes, no matter how exciting the work is. And I think that by accident this year, if you think that we are concentrating on Russian music, by design we're not. It's just that they provide that longer, meatier work.
Mm-hmm. You yourself have already appeared as a soloist. Will you tell us about that?
Well, this has been quite a month for me. My secretary in New York the other day said this was my 3P month. 3 weeks ago, my parents visited me. That was P number one. 2 weeks ago, I inaugurated the new organ in Cincinnati, a beautiful organ, a gift of Mr. Corbett, to Music Hall, and I played myself the Poulenc Organ Concerto, and this last weekend was a film of Pelléas and Mélisande, another P that I've been working on for 3 years, which I finally got on the boards. A film with the live orchestra, with the CSO playing, and it's too long to explain, but it was in fact a film. Yes, a huge screen on stage, the orchestra in the pit, and that was it.
Will we be seeing this in our movie houses or on television or where?
No, because it must be, the way I created it, it must be a live performance. So it must have a live orchestra. And technically, it's a very complicated spectacle because backstage, with rear projection, were 8 manual operators of 8 projectors, most of whom were musicians. It's very difficult because the technicians have to be musicians and the musicians have to be technicians.
Are you writing about this or are there going to be some articles about it that we can refer to?
I think so because a lot was written about it before since it's a completely new medium. I chose Pelléas and Mélisande. Don't get confused with the opera. This is a long tone poem of Arnold Schoenberg, yes.
I see. I thought we were talking about opera. Well, when you performed as soloist, as an organist with the orchestra, you did the Poulenc Concerto.
Yes.
Now, it's not too infrequent these days that conductors do, let's say, play the piano, conduct, or the violin and conduct. Are there any particular physical problems about conducting from the organ?
No more than from the piano. I think it's always, unless well rehearsed, a risk. And I do it very little. I think in the 4 years I've been in Cincinnati, I played the Rhapsody in Blue, I think, with the orchestra, and now the Poulenc. I prefer not to do it, but in a strange way, the Poulenc, although he was a friend of mine, incidentally, although I know he didn't intend it that way, it's extraordinary. The work is really written. In other words, I didn't have to do any tricks. I certainly didn't have to miss any notes. So I wasn't showing off by doing both things. The work is almost, it almost cries for one performer. And as a matter of fact, this spring, I've been invited to inaugurate the new organ in Tully Hall in New York, in Lincoln Center. And I will have a conductor. And that makes me very nervous.
You want to do your own thing. What work will you be playing at that time?
The Poulenc, again, yes. Uh-huh.
You've mentioned Music Hall. It's a beautiful building. Of course, there are many people who haven't been fortunate enough to attend concerts there. Would you tell us briefly about it?
Well, for me, it's not only by comparison with the other halls in America, but it's a little bit like speaking of Versailles. If you haven't been to Versailles, you can't describe it. Music Hall is unique because with the incredible renovations that they made 3 or 4 years ago, they were very careful not to affect the sound, not to affect the acoustics. And some people say that the acoustics are even better than they were before. And Music Hall in Cincinnati has always been famous for its sound.
It's about how old a structure?
Lots of anniversaries this year. Our 80th anniversary of the orchestra and the 100th anniversary of the hall.
Oh. And now a complex is being built around Music Hall.
On one side of Music Hall, yes, where people can park and walk over a bridge and never, you know, never face the street or the traffic or all those dirty red lights.
Tonight, Mr. Shippers, you're playing a concert in Delaware, Ohio. Last night you were in Mount Vernon, Ohio. Do you do quite a bit of touring to some of these smaller cities in Ohio?
As much as I can, because I think the smaller cities are the most important cities. I mean, Philadelphia really doesn't need the Cincinnati Orchestra, does it, with its own great orchestra. But I think that we are very important in this part of the country because, well, emotionally, the audiences are incredible because I think they're hungrier.
Isn't this a drain, in a way, on your energies?
Yes, but everything is. Yes, touring is very difficult. The hotels and getting my tails pressed and getting those terrible stiff shirts that I have to wear washed. Yes, that is all a strain, but...
But worth it. How about the expense of touring?
That you'd have to speak to the management about. I hear it's frightening.
Well, who pays for it?
That you'd also have to ask the management.
All right. Well, will you be traveling with the orchestra,
too? Unlike the waiter who says, that's not my table.
Will you be traveling to other states with the orchestra this season?
This season, no. This is a short tour for us. Last year we had two very long tours, and next year we do it again. This is, more by accident than design. This year is not a big touring season.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have had a long association with the Metropolitan Opera since 1955, and this year, this season, you'll be conducting two new productions. Would you like to speak a moment about these two?
In December comes Boris Godunov. I don't think for the first time in Russian at the Met, but we will be doing it in Russian just because there seems to be no convenient language to do the opera in other than Russian. And we have a cast that can handle the language.
Marty Tavlala will be singing.
Yes, who is Finnish and and speaks Russian. And so do I, incidentally. I mean, I wouldn't have taken the opera.
I was going to ask you that. How much association with Russian language or Russian history?
I've been to Russia 4 times, and I really Like my French, I really never studied French, but I lived in Paris long enough to learn to speak it, and I really learned my Russian more in Russia than anywhere else. In any case, it will be in Russian, and I think the most interesting aspect of it is that certainly for the first time in America, we are doing, you can't say the original version, because Mussorgsky himself didn't know what the original was. He rewrote the opera, rewrote certain scenes so many different times, but I would say that we are doing more of the notes that he wrote than any other production that has ever existed in America. And it's original in the sense that never at the Metropolitan have we used Mussorgsky's own orchestration.
Which you will be doing.
Yes.
And what about the sequence of scenes?
That will be, again, in quotes, the original version. For instance, I know that in the Polish scene, I do not only both scenes, but absolutely complete. I mean, there's not one note cut. And that is probably the first time in the world. There is some music that I have never heard before. I studied the Lamm version, L-A-M-M, which is simply a composite of every note that Mussorgsky wrote. Now, dramatically, when it gets sticky, then I have to do my own editing and decide upon which scene works better with our production. But other than that, it is really the most complete performance of the opera one can find.
Mm-hmm.
Very long, one has to be not sleepy.
I'll give you a chance to light your cigarette. What about the ending?
The ending is as he always wrote it. You know, Mussorgsky himself never ended with the death of Boris, and neither do we.
Okay.
We end, in fact, should we say, provocative, victorious entry of Gregory, of Dmitri.
Mm-hmm. Now, why have you chosen this version?
It's a bit of recent history, too. I was asked by Kubelik, who is now no longer with us, that is, he's not at the Metropolitan, but Kubelik begged me to do this version. And I studied it for a year and then agreed to do it. And it really stems from him.
Mm-hmm. Now, radio audiences will be hearing this on the Texaco broadcast on January 25th. Now, how about the other new production that you'll be conducting?
Well, that's almost a life story, because without... I've done that three or four times in my life. I discovered an opera, virtually unknown opera of Rossini called The Siege of Corinth. It was funny this summer because I was recording The Siege of Corinth in London, and I was looking for a house to rent in Greece, not knowing that Cyprus was going to rear its head. And someone offered me a house in a little island very, very near Athens called Idra. And when I finally talked with the owner, I said to him, "Now look, I've never taken a house without seeing it because, you know, I'm very sensitive to noise and I mean, I want to be quiet because a conductor really, never has a real vacation. It's always work and it's always study." And I said, "Is it really quiet? And do you..." Because I'd been told that the house was in the village. "What about the local cafe? I mean, you're telling me that they do not have a radio, they don't have, you know, a loudspeaker. And she said, "You don't want my house." And she was sweet enough to try to find another house, and she found a house, believe it or not, in Corinth.
Oh.
Well, that house I didn't even inquire about because I couldn't resist.
You knew right away.
I couldn't resist the coincidence, and so I took the house,
yeah.
Sight unseen. The thing is that the opera that we will do at the Metropolitan is a bit of a mystery. It's a big mystery for me because there is no score. Rossini himself suffered so much about the opera that he made, I have now discovered, 5 different versions. And I just took it upon myself, when I did it at La Scala, which is 5 or 6 years ago, I've still, I think, improved the dramatic aspect of the opera. So I have put all of his own five versions together, and that is what the opera at the Met will be.
How long did it take you to do this?
2 years. 2 years then, and a year and a half now.
And this is the version that you presented at La Scala in
1969? It is not. This is still different. It is, even the second act is different, and the third act is very different.
Now, Beverly...
But I discovered new music, you see. I never knew. I knew about a Neapolitan version, a French, a Paris version, a Pesaro version, a Rome version. What I didn't know until about a year and a half ago was a Venetian version. And I think it's rather amusing that when Rossini wrote his Venetian version, he obviously was working with different singers, so he wrote them different scenes, two of which are very beautiful, and I've included in this now new version. But at the end, it was rather ironic recording it in London, because at the very time that the Greeks and the Turks were fighting, we were recording the opera in London, and after all, the opera is about the Greeks and the Turks fighting. However, when Rossini performed the opera in Venice, he changed the whole thing around at the end and made the Venetians win the war.
Well, so what did you take from the Venetian version?
There's a long trio in the last act. There's a cabaletta for Miss Sills in the second act. And a rather important scene for Papa, who had a rather small role and now is more important.
Mm-hmm. Everyone must know, of course, that Beverly Sills is making her Met debut in this opera. Who else will be singing with her? Who will be the prince, for instance?
Very important singer. Well, there isn't a prince, really. There's the, let's start with Papa, who is Harry Thayard, who is the boy who had an enormous success with me 2 years ago in Spoleto in Manolesco, which we also brought to Cincinnati last year. And he, incidentally, is also my Dimitri in Boris. And very vital. It's a pants role, we call it, but is Shirley Verrett, who will sing the part that was originally written for a tenor. Originally written for a contralto, as she is, and then because the Parisians didn't like girls in men's roles, Rossini completely wrote the part for a tenor. So I'm going back to the original. And also very important is the prince. You mean, yes, maybe you're right, Maometto, which was the original name of the opera, incidentally, in Naples. That is Justino Diaz. Mm-hmm. That, in essence, is the cast.
Now, since this opera is really not at all well known to most of us, how would you say it compares to Rossini's The Barber of Seville or William Tell?
That's a difficult question. William Tell is very far from The Barber of Seville. I can answer. This is the closest work of Rossini's to Verdi. One can almost say that without the Siege of Corinth and without the later operas of Donizetti, we very likely would not have had a Verdi. So it is, I think that's why I was willing to spend so much time on it. It is in the evolution of the Italian opera approaching the Verismo of late Verdi and Puccini, very, very vital.
Do you think we'll see more revivals of Rossini in the years to come?
I hope so.
Would you like to conduct some of them?
I'd like to conduct all of them.
All of them. You know, you've had a long and happy association with the operas of Giancarlo Menotti. Could you just answer one brief question about Spoleto that I've been wondering about? Why is it called the Festival of Two Worlds?
Because, rather simple at the very beginning, because I was American and Menotti was Italian, and we couldn't afford a festival in America, but we wanted to use the vitality of the young Americans, and hence the title.
Okay.
In fact, it's rather a misnomer, because it is an international festival, and that's the excitement of it, that we have students from all over the world.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
Thomas Schiffers.